And welcome, everybody. It's really great to see you all here this morning. I think, as most of you know, I'm Lyndall Johnson, one of the Sims Assistant Teachers, and I'm going to be leading our meditation today. And then we're going to have something a little bit different for our Dharma talk. So I'll tell you about that when we get to that point. Okay. Well, I think I'm going to go ahead and start with our not exactly a Dharma talk this morning, because we may have quite a bit to do. We want to make sure we have enough time. So I will go ahead here. So as you all know, over this month, we've been studying equanimity. And we've talked about what an important quality it is to cultivate, and maybe especially in these times when there's so much division and so much difficulty. We've learned about how cultivating it has to do with mindfulness and concentration, but also with wisdom, understanding our impermanence. Understanding how we can renounce our need to have things in a particular way. We've learned too that it isn't about feeling disconnected or that everything that happens is fine and nice. It's more about having that kind of steadiness of mind so we can see clearly what's happening, acknowledge what's happening, and to be with it without lashing out in anger or retreating into disconnection. And so today we're going to be doing something a little bit different to wrap up our study of equanimity. So rather than having a single Dharma talk, we're going to have a kind of a panel on equanimity. So Suze, Judith, Nina, and I will all share a little bit about what equanimity means to us and the role it plays in our practice. And then when we have the breakout groups, we'll invite you to do the same for your own experiences. So let's begin. I'm going to get us started by talking a little bit about equanimity and what it means to me. And then our other participants will have a chance to share their thoughts too. So equanimity has played a pretty big role in my practice. I first got a taste of it at my first retreat pretty early on. And although at the time, I don't know if I really recognized this as equanimity, it was equanimity. So after several days of sitting and walking and feeling restless and anxious for a lunch break so I could just go off and, you know, think whatever I wanted to think, I found that I didn't really want to do that anymore. I didn't want to be caught up in that wandering mind. It was much more satisfying to just be with what was around me. The feeling of my body moving, sounds and smells in the environment, warmth of the sun. And I thought, you know, if I can just be present for what's here right now, I really don't need anything else. And that sense of contentment and of not needing things to be different, that's a pretty big thing, really. And it's recurred many times over the years in my practice. And it's been really important because it's helped me to believe that that end of suffering really is possible in a real and practical way. At least, you know, just for the moment. Just for the moment, I can be in this place where I'm not craving, where I'm not avoiding or reacting, and experience that moment of equanimity. And another way that I've also experienced equanimity is not just when I'm in this place of, you know, mindfulness and openness to all that's occurring, but when I'm going through a really difficult experience. And, you know, if I'm really anxious or angry or sad, And in those times, I've found that if I really try to cultivate a sense of equanimity, it does help. And I use those phrases, reminding myself, this is the way it is right now. And I try to stop complaining and resisting and, going off into the story of what's happening and just be there with the experience of grief or of anger or whatever else is going on. Let it be in my body as it passes and it's change and it changes. And once that happens, I feel a little steadier, a little more able to, see the situation and respond in a wise way. And I can see I don't have to react. So that equanimity, it's not passive. It isn't feeling like everything is fine, no matter what it is. It's more being able to acknowledge this is what's happening, to be present with it, to have that steadiness. So I don't have to lash out and can just be quiet for a while. And then when I have some calm, respond from wisdom. So that's a bit of what it's like for me. So I'm going to pass the baton to our other participants. Nina, would you like to share something about equanimity in your practice?
Yes, Lindal, thank you. Thank you for yours. I'm coming today answering the questions that were put forward to us is what does equanimity mean to me? And what role has it played in my practice? And I first encountered equanimity when I started going to the Vipassana retreats with the teacher Goenka. And every time we would sit for an hour, and his talks were always, he would always say, stay equanimous, stay equanimous. And that was the first time I had known what equanimous was, and that's what I learned about. And it did help me to understand my own reactivity to things. And I became, over the years, I became much calmer, much more thoughtful on how I would respond to things. And so it has had a big impact on my life. I mean, before practicing being equanimous, I could react with anger or, accusations or, different, don't know what you would call, just being too reactive and not really looking at the whole picture. And that was part of it. What I have learned more recently is in my reacting or my response to difficult situations, I often felt that I was equanimous, but in truth, I was being passive. And so in that way, I did not act, did not come up with an action, and just let things just go. And sometimes I think with being equanimous, that's really not the answer. It's almost like passivity is closer to what Tuari has said, is closer to aversion. And I felt that at times it was my being having aversion to maybe the situation, or not wanting to come up with a response. And so, as Lindell said, being equanimous is not indifference. And sometimes we have to come up with an action. And in realizing this and becoming aware of this, I've been developing the wisdom, and the strength to develop a rightful action when I'm responding instead of reacting. And that's been a big, big lesson for me in my life. And one of my teachers at Spirit Rock, his name is Guru Singh, he says, equanimity is developing the wisdom to rest, knowing where to rest the heart. And I really like that description and listening to it. So now I'm less reactive, I'm more easygoing, and the absorption that I've gone through with equanimity has really let me be more peaceful and live with much more ease in my life. So I could say that. The other thing is that with developing more skill in rightful action with equanimity, I've just found that there's so many parts of what we've been learning over the past year, either the paramis and all the different lists that we learn from the Buddha. One which has most been another critical thing for me is being aware of my Vedana, my sense, my instinct, and really understanding that, my feeling tones. Like, you know, instead of when I'm in the reaction stage, it's like, well, thinking about how does this feel? Is it pleasant or unpleasant or neutral? And that's really helped me too, to in developing my equanimity in things. So in the end, it really leads to having a wise view on things. And also included in that is having patience and warmth, because equanimity is a heart practice. It's a heart quality. So it has lots of metta in it, sympathetic joy and compassion. And so it's such a vast energy, this being equanimous. And it has so many different, what I could say is colors to it, so many different ways that we can practice being equanimous. That it's, you know, it's almost like never ending, and the space that being equanimous gives us in our life is just so vast. And so that's been my experiences with the impartiality of the mind and not reacting. So again, it's like developing the wisdom to know where to rest my heart. I'd like to end with a poem by Joseph Goldstein. He just came out with a new little book of poetry that I got through IMS, called Dream Strikes of the Mind. And I felt that this poem also gives a reflection of the qualities that we face when practicing equanimity. It doesn't have a title. Still dark, engulging in the warm cocoon, so reluctant to leave. Everything's a poem, although not always a good one. Thank you. I pass this on to Judith.
Yeah, thank you, Nina, so much.
All right. Well, I've been thinking a lot about equanimity, obviously, since that's what we're focusing on. And so this week I was reviewing what I've learned about it. So how I see equanimity is it is being equally open to and accepting of whatever is right now in this present moment. And like Nina just said, it is not indifference. And I think it's really easy to get mixed up between the two. But indifference is like a withdrawing from, whereas equanimity is an opening to, an embracing of. And also, as you said, it's not passive. In fact, it is the springboard to compassion, to wise action, to all of the paramis, and to the Brahmaviharas as well, because the equanimous mind is a clear mind with discernment, as you know, to what needs to be done, what can be done, what needs to be done. And the other thing I have learned from Joseph Goldstein is that it is always available. And so I've been thinking about, okay, if it's always available, like, where is it? Why, you know, why can't I access it at will? And then I started thinking about the two levels of consciousness. Every spiritual path I've ever been involved in talks about the two levels of consciousness that we typically act from. One, of course, the most prevalent, the most obvious, is the reactive mind, often called the monkey mind, the one that makes stuff up and frets about the past and the future, and it's all over the place. And clearly, that's not where you find equanimity. So the other one is often called the witness, or the higher self. It's the state of awareness that sees the monkey mind, knows what it's up to, doesn't necessarily believe it, though, and that is just simply open and accepting of the present moment. And there it is. There's equanimity, right? And that's, of course, what we're always trying to get to when we meditate. And so then I'm thinking about, okay, this accepting of the present moment, I've always had a little bit of a problem with that, because the present moment doesn't stand still. It just keeps moving. And I find that by the time I've accepted this present moment, it's already down the line and I've got another one to deal with. And then I suddenly had this, well, insight, or it was almost like an image. And I thought, okay, what if this steady state of equanimous, accepting, calm awareness is the present, the eternal present, and time just flows through it like the water flowing through the rocks in the creek. And it's not mine. It's not something I have to create or strive for. It is just there, like Joseph Goldstein said. And essentially, when I access it, I'm not really accepting this moment and this moment and this moment and this moment. What I'm accepting and open to is the flow of time and what it brings and what it takes away, right? And somehow seeing it that way made it much easier for me to actually access it. So, also I have a tiny little poem that I wanted to share with you. Because this poem to me is a perfect metaphor of the kind of loving energy that is activated by the equanimous mind. And this is a poem by the Sufi poet Hafiz, translated by Daniel Ladinsky. And it goes like this. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Look what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole sky. And now Suze.
Well, isn't this fun to have all these perspectives? And thank you to each of you. So I really like using mantras, using phrases that I repeat to myself a lot. And for the last few months, I've been using a short mantra, which I say to myself many times a day. May I be at ease with whatever comes my way. And so in the few minutes I have this morning, I wanted to share two examples of how this mantra has been really beneficial to me, and it's kind of been the way I've been practicing with equanimity. The first happened last Wednesday. I have a regular sit that I've had for many years with two long standing Dharma friends. And the whole day started off a little bit off kilter. You know how sometimes you just wake up kind of grumpy or sad or lonesome or whatever. And so for me, sadness and lonesomeness seem to just be filling every moment. And then at the same time, I'd been reading this really sweet and tender novel that seemed to add to that kind of tone. And then in the early morning hours of the morning before my sit, several things happened that I really didn't like. Just, you know, problems with the computer, problems with, I've been in battle with the post office, and just, you know, these things that were going on. But I kept on saying my mantra, may I be at ease with whatever shows up. And so I asked myself, well, what are the essential ingredients of being at ease, no matter what? And I came up with a few. First, the desire to be at ease has to be really sincere and come from an actual commitment and intention. It can't just be a phrase that, you know, I put up on post-its on my refrigerator or whatever. Second, I had to really trust that there is enough resilience and strength of practice inside of me that I would be able to be at ease, that it was something that was going to be doable for me. And third, and most important, I had to remember to bring my practice along with me, no matter when, no matter what. Within that last piece, I realized that I could stay with the sad, the disappointing, the unpleasant, the lonesomeness, and not get swamped by them. I could feel them in the body. I could remember that things arise and pass away and know that that's going to change over time. And I could keep restating the implied part of my mantra about whatever comes my way in this moment, right now. Or like Judith was saying, kind of how time is flowing through my day. Right now, be present. This is the way it is right now. And it's true, I don't like it. But this is the way it is. And it's so helpful to make this is the way it is bigger than I don't like it. So being angry at it, it's not going to make it different or better. And I could just keep watching my mind, especially how it tries to blame someone or something for the negative emotions that have arisen. I watched that desire to blame arise, and I just sat there and smiled at it. It was so familiar. And fortunately, I've been practicing long enough that this in the smile was, that's not skillful, you know. And after a while, the mind really settled down. The second example comes from a fairly new relationship that I'm in. And with all the rubs and newness and unknowns in, that come along with a new relationship. And I live in that space where my acceptance of my friend Let him be just who he is, lives right next to and rubs up against my desire for things and for him to be different. So for a while I've been thinking that, oh, you know, things aren't right in this and I need to take some action. I need to kind of like lay out my list of wants and ask for specific changes. I imagine there are a lot of people here who know exactly that kind of list and the energy that comes up with, this needs to be different. But when I sat with all these thoughts and feelings and brought back in my mantra, may I be at ease with whatever comes my way, another option appeared. What if I don't take any action? What if I just continue to practice being at ease with things being in a slightly conflictive phase? Could I just be at ease with conflict? I went back to the earlier ingredients I needed for being at ease. My commitment was sincere and strong. Second, I trust myself that if things really become super difficult, I can advocate for myself, set reasonable boundaries, and use the best skills of wise speech that I have, that I've been practicing. And most importantly, I could bring my best kind of awake self to the relationship and all of what that means. I can be kind, patient, really a good listener. I can try to be the best kind of friend I can be. I can be respectful of both him and me. I can offer metta to him, to me, to my mind, to the situation. And of course, in relationships, you know, you ask for what you want from the other person. That's really important. But with my mantra, this is the best thing I learned, that I can ask in the best way possible, but not be too attached to the outcome. Practicing this way, I feel really good about taking care of myself, see what my needs and wants are, and yet have a pretty soft, kind of light relationship to how he responds. I'm taking care of myself. I'm taking actions which are as skillful and wholesome as they can be, and I stay open to what happens. I had a recent experience with this where I asked for something. He took some time, he came back, he responded. It was very sweet, and it was so not what I wanted. It was sweet, it was thoughtful, and it was organic from him. And so inside, I could just smile and go, may I be at ease with whatever shows up. It isn't easy, but I feel easier inside. And that's worth repeating. I feel easier inside. So the month on the equanimity may be all over, but I'm holding on to my mantra. May I be at ease with whatever life sends to me. May I be at ease. May my heart and my mind be at ease. May I hang out in an atmosphere of ease and well-being. I can do this. Thanks for listening.
Well, thanks to all of you for your really nice contributions. Such different voices, different perspectives, but it's so complimentary, giving a big picture of what equanimity can be. And now we have some time for all of you to do the same thing. Share your thoughts about equanimity, maybe about how you've been practicing. Oh, Judith is saying bye-bye. She has to leave. Bye, and thank you so much. Really nice little talk. So you'll have a chance to share with each other your own experiences with equanimity. Maybe your practice over this month, or maybe what it has meant to you over a longer time period. So if anyone needs to leave now because they have things going on that they have to attend to, this is a good time to do that. But I hope you'll all be able to stay for our discussion. And then I will go ahead and setup bar discussion group, and you can have 15 minutes or so to talk about your own experiences with equanimity. Welcome back, everybody. So now we have a little bit of time for you to share any thoughts that you might have, comments, questions. You can let me know that you have something you would like to say by raising your virtual hand if you would like, or since I can see everybody on the screen now, you could also, oh, Nana raised his hand. Okay. You have the floor, Nana. You can unmute yourself and
Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome.
Lots of gratitude for sprinkling a healthy dose of equanimity on me. Let me speak for myself today. All I would share was just a comment I just shared in the group. That in my reflections now, equanimity is just like darkness and light. Because what I just shared was from a scientific perspective, for the utility of light to be seen, there has to be the presence of darkness. Otherwise, light is useless. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think this is true, too. I mean, we recognize equanimity from knowing the difference between that state of mind and the state of mind we're in when we're so caught up in our reactivity. And I know I learned to appreciate equanimity from feeling the pain of the reactivity. So thank you. That's a very incisive comment. Yes, Jerry.
Just a couple of things. It's really striking me this morning. And I said this in the small group too, is just the value of Sangha. Yeah, the way the form of today, and a couple of you got up and took a couple of minutes to say, this is what equanimity means to me. And each one of you kind of supported my perspective. It was like, I don't often think of it that way, but yeah, okay, that rings true. And I just kind of, I just had this gratitude for Sangha. It's like we gathered together with the same intentions of not causing harm and living our lives through the Brahma Viharas and being mindful. And each one has their own world. And when I hear a perspective, It's really nice. I find it really supportive. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you. And that's really nice feedback to know that it's really helpful to have this kind of group sharing like this. Yes, Charlotte.
Yes, I think you said a couple of times, Lyndall, that you appreciate that when you don't have reactivity, there isn't that karmic retribution, karmic, what we have to, I'm sorry, that we don't have to have the pain of, oh, why did I do that? I wish I hadn't said that. If we are kind and considerate people around us. I'm a little foggy today, so I'll let that go. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, Suze, thank you. Please.
One of the things that came from my group is just the beauty of the invitation to pause, to stop, notice all the different things that are up and pause and then go back to, you know, what's the appropriate response? It's just such a beautiful gift. And it seems connected to the entire year of Paramis, but especially equanimity of just saying, oh, right, I'm a twirly mess inside this head. Maybe I should just stop and ask what's really going on and what, you know, how do I want to respond? So each of us talked about the gift of that, and really seems like a beautiful gift of the practice.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate about that thing. Okay, I'm a swirling mess. It's time for me to pause. That is so true. I think we can all relate to that. And it's such a part of sinking into that equanimity, being willing to do that. Candace?
I had mentioned before that your leading us in that meditation really had a breakthrough for me. And it was about a friend I'm seeing this week, and I've been feeling very agitated about seeing them, and I couldn't figure it out. Unpleasantly agitated. And just the phrases allowed me to realize that I'm worried about them. I think that maybe they're going about some things not quite right, but I don't want to open my big mouth and say anything about it because it's their life. And somehow the phrases allowed me to just relax, to just say, I'm going to be with them this week, and I'm really glad we'll be together, and I don't have to say a thing. I can just be there and listen, because it's not my business. It's their life. And, oh, what a gift that was. I just felt so lightened with that. I mean, for all the work I've been doing on equanimity, that hadn't sunk in. So I was so grateful that you did that today. You did what I needed.
That's wonderful. I'm really glad to hear that. And it's that practice. I mean, not everyone always includes that, but I find it really helpful sometimes. And especially in daily life, just to pause and maybe say those phrases when I'm a swirling mess. Thank you, Candace. Okay. And I'd also like to invite if Suze or Nina, if you would like to add anything, our panelists here, please do. But just, maybe not.
Just a thank you to the Sangha for being here and thank you for your practice and supporting us.
That comes from all of us, and Judith in abstentia too. So thank you everybody for your good comments and for being here. So in this last minute, let's take a little bit of time to offer a bit of metta and to share the merit of our practice. So taking a moment maybe to bring somebody to mind that you feel is in need of loving kindness, maybe is in need of access to equanimity. And we can each in our own way offer to share in the merit of our practice with this person. You know, a force for good is created when we come together like this. And in mysterious ways, it may benefit others close to us and far away. So may these special people benefit from the merit of our practice. And may we extend that to all beings. May all beings share in the merit of our practice today. And may all beings find peace, ease, and equanimity in a difficult world. Thanks, everybody, for being here today and for sharing with us. It was a really nice morning, and I hope you have a great day. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.